Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
Not bad, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Well, I mean, we're recording this on Friday at the end of the week, so very much looking forward to the weekend.
Yes, and ahead of the weekend, I've got one question for you. Is it coming home?
Is this a football-related question? I mean, by the time that people listen to this, we'll know.
I know, yeah. So I'm recording this with some trepidation that we might have completely mistaken the general tone of the audience at the time. Well, that depends actually on whether it's an English audience or elsewhere, because I think elsewhere they'd be quite happy, I think, for England to lose.
Yeah. I think I saw something today that surveyed every other European country about who they'll be supporting, and every single one of them said that they'd be supporting Italy.
Does it feel like this is Brexit, the football match?
Yeah.
Well, on today's podcast, we've got lots of great interviews, including a chat with Pretty Little Things' Lee Carter on the value of multi-touch attribution. He spoke to our very own Mark Cahillo, whose attribution solution, SingleView, is now part of the Awin tech suite available for our clients. And they discuss the dilemmas that brands face when trying to measure the value of your ad spend in today's world of multi-channel marketing. Laura Meunier, Global Savings Group's commercial director, also caught up with our UK client services director, Dawn Quigg, about the pivotal role that fostering quality standards plays in ensuring the affiliate channel continues to grow. And finally, I spoke to Holger von Ellertz, consultant at Digital Nailu, and an expert on the Swiss digital ad market, ask him about the latest trends in affiliate marketing out there. Before all that, though, I wanted to quickly talk about another podcast, which is actually quite helpfully called Another Podcast. So this is a tech and media podcast hosted by Benedict Evans, a former analyst at the VC firm Andreessen Horowitz, who now operates independently as an analyst and whose popular weekly newsletter is a real trove of fascinating analysis and tidbits on the inner workings of the wider digital world, and well worth signing up to if you haven't already. Now, Another Podcast is the droll title of the show that he co-hosts with Tony Cowan Brown, and it's well worth a listen if you're looking for interesting discussions on recent tech trends and their potential implications for the wider world. And what caught my attention recently was the episode entitled The Business of Publishing. Now, usually these episodes follow a fairly standard template where the two hosts will discuss and debate the topic at hand. But for this particular one, they invited Jeremy White, executive editor of Wired UK, onto the show to ask him about how Wired has had to evolve its business model over the years as it struggled to generate enough income from traditional advertising, both in print and online. I don't know if you remember, Kev, but Jeremy actually presented at our Affiliate Code conference back in 2018, I think, on some of the megatrends affecting digital. So he's a familiar face from an Awin perspective.
Yeah.
What was fascinating and warming to hear, I think, in this interview, though, was, and which explains my mentioning it today, is that time and again on the episode, Jeremy referenced the affiliate channel as being a source of real commercial hope to them. That Wired had slowly come to recognize the value of the channel in being able to generate significant revenues for them through their content, and that it was something that they saw as taking on a much more important role to them as a successful business in the future. And obviously this is amid a backdrop of declining income from print editions, obviously, but also from traditional display advertising, which we've seen numerous studies demonstrate over the last few years, the ISBA study being the most kind of prominent one of those last year, how it's not been able to properly fund quality journalism and content creators because of the so-called ad tech tax, where for every £1 invested by advertisers in advertising on a publisher's site, 70% of that spend was necessarily being taken by the middlemen facilitating the delivery of those ads. And there was one quote in particular from Jeremy in the interview where he said about the fact that, you know, we finally struck upon this method by which publishing companies or journalists can monetize the output that they have and the content that they produce. And that was affiliate marketing. And I just thought that the interview was really, really interesting to hear almost an outsider's view on it and the real value that they obviously recognize in it right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it's so rare that we hear affiliate marketing talked about outside of our kind of affiliate marketing bubble. So when people do talk about it, it's always really interesting. It's almost like gold dust because you get a different perspective and you get a different angle. And I think that one of the things that we've always, I wouldn't say struggled with, but we've always had as a challenge is how we talk about our channel in a meaningful way to a wider audience. And I think that when you hear people talking about it, you can kind of think, well, actually what they're saying is maybe slightly off like where you know, it's slightly off from what we would want to, how we would want to be talking about it or selling it in. So I think, for example, that it really felt like to me that they had sort of hit upon this, that they know that it's not new because it's referenced the fact that, you know, it's been around for at least, you know, they had experience of from at least 10 years ago of monetizing a blog. But it felt as if there's a huge opportunity for us as a business and wider industry to reach out to these businesses and kind of take them on a journey, take them on the journey that and really support them on that journey. I think the thing that I do find frustrating is the fact that I know that Amazon is ubiquitous, but the thing I find frustrating is the fact that they are the automatic go-to when people talk about affiliate marketing, because Amazon don't do any PR, right? They don't do any, they don't talk about their Amazon Associates program. They don't go out and talk about it to the industry. They don't do any kind of webinars or blog posts or insight pieces around it. And by contrast, you know, businesses like ours do, and yet Amazon is seen as the automatic go-to when people talk about affiliate marketing. And actually that was, if we sort of slightly change tack to another podcast, not another podcast, but
this could get confusing.
Yeah. So Pivot, which obviously it's you know, Pivot is a really popular podcast where they kind of effectively talk about like news and tech in combination. And the June the 29th episode, around about 20 minutes into the episode, if you haven't listened to it, then they start talking about affiliate marketing as well, and Amazon again is referenced. And so I think that we need to work out as an industry how we get in front of these decision makers and these people who can go have got big audiences to go and talk to, and how we offer kind of, I suppose, positive stories or positive news and engaging content that they can then talk about themselves.
Yeah, the framing of the topic on the Pivot podcast was, and this particular podcast, which I'm also an avid listener of, actually, it has a much more of a kind of US slant to it, and they're very much looking at things from the US side. And I believe that they're talking about it within the context of the planned BuzzFeed IPO. And if you look at the investor deck, which is publicly available, I've had a kind of like a quick scan through what they put together for that. And it's really interesting to see how central affiliate and e-commerce is as a planned source of revenue and kind of value to the company in their plans to expand and grow.
It's referenced early on, right? When BuzzFeed talk to its investor pack, and they're talking to the market about the growth of the evolution of the business. And on that timeline in 2018, they referenced the fact that they started using affiliate marketing as a monetization of content source. And going back to another podcast, they also reference future publishing. And as we know, and we've sort of published content on it as a business, future publishing is probably, I would say, the leader in terms of the amount of revenue that they generate from affiliate marketing. It's something like £70 million. In their latest results presentation, it's being generated through affiliate marketing. The thing that I find quite interesting about BuzzFeed, not so much BuzzFeed, because they are obviously a digital first and digital only business. But if you take, I suppose, Condé Nast and Future, sort of the more of the traditional publishers, it's interesting how those businesses, out of necessity, because of declining circulation and therefore declining ad revenue, sort of traditional ad revenue, out of that, we've been able to sort of forge quite a positive narrative around affiliate marketing, as kind of helping them to sort of shore up and also like potentially save those businesses, help them to reinvent themselves. So from something that's potentially sort of quite a doom and gloom story, we've been able to, affiliate marketing is becoming synonymous with helping those businesses to thrive.
Yeah, it feels like there's been a real light bulb moment, I would say, over the last 18 months, 2 years, if you want to extend it a little bit further. But I would say that it's no coincidence that this has occurred as a consequence and in the aftermath of the global lockdown, the pandemic. We've seen the implications of that for particularly high-profile news media publishers who had loss of earnings due, even at a time when their traffic was at an all-time high because of the interest in authoritative reporting on the pandemic. And yet they were seeing diminishing returns on that traffic because of things like keyword blocking around kind of terms like COVID, for instance, or pandemic, and advertisers not being able to place those ads there because of the nature of how that programmatically enable model tends to function.
Well, and now we need to really capitalize on that, because going back to your point around the sort of that 70% that in the programmatic supply chain that goes missing, you know, we need to be saying, well, you can speak directly to the brands in a way that you can't with programmatic. What they're saying that they're going to pay you is what you're going to get paid. You get 100% of what they want to pay you. So, you know, so that we really need to sort of capitalize on that, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm hopeful. I think it's quite an optimistic outlook in terms of those partnerships. So I'm sure that at some point we will probably look to get one of those big publishers onto the podcast to talk a little bit more about how they have adopted affiliate and what it's meant to them in kind of the last few months.
Hello, I'm the founder of SingleView. SingleView is a digital multi-touch attribution platform. I'm here today with Lee Carter. Lee, feel free to introduce yourself too.
So, hi, I'm Lee Carter. I'm the marketing attribution manager at Pretty Little Thing. So I mainly look after affiliate marketing, students, partnerships, all the sexy stuff.
Excellent. Well, I'm here to ask a few questions today. You're here to answer them. I'll kick off, Lee. What attribution models were PLT using prior to working with SingleView?
So we were mainly using last non-direct click, so literally just the numbers that came straight out of Google Analytics. For a long time, we kind of knew they weren't the correct numbers, but it was numbers that the business understood, so we kind of stuck with them. Before we kind of went with a full attribution tool, some of the channels started using data from their own platform. So we might use sort of post view or post impression data from display platforms, from paid social platforms. We might use the kind of wider post-click data in Awin, but 99% of our reporting was based on the numbers that came out of GA.
Was it? Using last click. And how did you find it? Because you've got a BI background. How did you find it worked for you using a metric such as last click, which was actually adopted and established in the last century?
I think the entire business knew it was incorrect. But and this was kind of when I started at PLT, I was on the BI side and the analysis side. We knew there was a better option, but it was trying to find an option that worked for everyone. Like I say, with the last click model, we knew it was incorrect, but it was something that everybody agreed on. But we also knew that there was a better way. You know, there were certain channels and certain campaigns within our digital spend that we knew were performing much better than we could ever prove with last click.
This is always a really interesting one, actually, because it's a biggie to migrate from last click to MTA, especially when accountants are concerned, because they like to sign off budget based on what they know. And well, that's like going from petrol to electric, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It did take a little while. I think at the time that we started working with SingleView, I had just switched over from the BI side to the marketing side. So I kind of had sort of contacts on both sides of the wall, which did make it slightly easier. But yeah, I think the main thing from our side was kind of proving why Last Click was kind of outdated, trying to put a case together to prove that using the Last Click model, we potentially weren't spending our money in the most efficient way. So instead of initially going down the road of saying, you know, if we switch to MTA, we're going to make X amount of money, it was, if we switch to MTA, we're going to spend X amount of money better. So we focused a lot on what we were spending, our ROI and our ROAS, and kind of just getting a better overall view. I think one of the things with Last Click we found is it created a view that each customer just clicks on one channel and that's it. And then that's their kind of their trail for life. But obviously we know customers go through many steps in their journey to purchase from us. So switching to an MTA model gave us a full view of that funnel, and then let us kind of split things out into upper funnel channels, mid-channel funnels, and then kind of conversion channels. And being able to split those out and to attribute an ROI and a ROAS to all of those channels at each point in the journey made it a lot easier for the finance guys to kind of get their heads around it. And then we started on a trial basis. And I think, you know, within the first 3 months, I think the business saw the need for single view and kind of the bonuses that it added. And the rest is history.
Would you say that there's a change management piece that people need to consider to take an organization on the journey beyond Last Click?
Definitely. I think as well, because a lot of people in finance will look at your week-on-week performance, your month-on-month, your year-on-year. And when you look at something like the affiliate channel, which performs very well on the Last Click, but maybe doesn't always have the full impact of the funnel, when you switch over to an MTA model and all of a sudden you're, you know, doing sort of 20 or 30% less than you were the previous month, it can raise some eyebrows because they might not fully understand the way we're measuring things. So yeah, the thing that worked for us is I kind of fell into a role of like a project manager for this. So I managed kind of teaching everyone about what MTA was, what the benefits were, and then kind of sort of holding everyone's hands as we kind of went through this journey together. I was just gonna say, and then, you know, we're using MTA in a lot of our reporting, but also we still have that Last Click view that the business understands. And we kind of, you know, if we get questions raised on a Last Click basis, we can then use the MTA data to fill in the gaps of the story.
Okay. Are there any examples you could give of any sort of assumptions, received wisdoms, or behaviours which were entrenched within the business which have changed as a result of having this extra dimension?
Yeah, so one of the big ones was that the affiliate channel was kind of just me and my team stood with a big bucket at the bottom of the funnel, kind of catching all the sales that that the other channels had worked really hard for. And we did find that there were some publishers we worked with that were not really adding a huge benefit. They were just kind of picking up the sales at the end. But using the full funnel view, we could see there was a huge amount of publishers that were really, really engaging customers in that upper and mid funnel. So that was quite good that it showed that affiliate channel using different publishers for different stages in the journey, all working together, would kind of get people through. And the other one we had was non-brand PPC from our kind of data. Non-brand PPC doesn't perform fantastically well on a Last Click basis. But using the MTA view, we could see that actually non-brand PPC was pivotal in introducing customers to the funnel. It may not be their conversion channel, not a non-brand PPC element, the customer probably would have never been introduced to the brand and would have shopped somewhere else.
Okay, so those are examples of just assumptions which have been challenged and ways which, I suppose, strategy has changed?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we were potentially moving money away from things like non-brand PPC because using the Last Click data, we thought doesn't perform really well, doesn't really do a lot for us. And now we've invested a bit more into it, and on a Last Click basis, it still doesn't look fantastic. But on a attribution basis, we can see that it's having a really, really positive impact, introducing people into the brand, helping us go after new customers, and doing it quite efficiently as well.
Brilliant, brilliant. We should get a testimonial for that. I think we just did. Has the way that you use the data changed over time? in terms of you just pull it from a platform? Do you ingest it into the business? How's that work?
So we do a bit of both. So we're quite a data-centric company, and our BI team are very, very capable. So we pull the raw data from single view via an API, but we also all have access to the platform. So if I'm after just, a, you know, if I want to look at a particular publisher or a particular campaign we've run, I can jump into the platform, look at a particular campaign in a particular market and see how it's performed. But at the same time, if we need something a bit more in depth, our BI team have got literally like the data broken down at an order level, and we can really, really get into the detail if we want to see how something's performed. One of the examples of this is our reporting. We use all three data sources for affiliates. So we use the data from Awin, the data on a last click basis, and the data from SingleView. And we kind of use that to build kind of a picture of, you know, this is what Awin's claiming on like the 30-day look back window. This is what last click and what kind of the wider business sees. And this is kind of the attributed view. And it really helps us kind of pick out individual publishers and campaigns and really get into the detail of how well things have worked and the impact it's had on the customer journey.
And you do you create your own internal metric with that?
We're in the process of doing it, but I think because there's so much data, I think it's just taken us a little bit longer than expected to kind of build like a, to kind of turn those three numbers into a one number. But okay. Hopefully we'll get there.
That's really interesting. And it's really progressive. There are a few advertisers we've got who, few advertisers take the data via API, and even fewer then manipulate it to create their own internal metrics. Is there any advice you would offer to advertisers who are considering starting the journey to move from whatever linear metric they currently have to MTA?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the big ones is try and understand the difference between last click that you see in Google Analytics versus true last click. So in Google Analytics, it's last non-direct click. And the difference between last non-direct click and last click sometimes can be quite big. So for channels like organic, you know, some weeks we see a sort of a 30 to 40% difference in last non-direct click versus last click. So that's one of them. I think as well, MTAs, it's a bit of a journey. It's one of those things you don't turn on day one and you know, all your questions are answered. There's a few hoops to jump through, and there's a bit of understanding. And it does take a bit of work to get the whole business on board. But once you have that kind of full funnel view, it enables you to answer so many questions so easily. So yeah, just persevere. It will take, you know, I think it probably took us maybe between sort of 4 and 6 weeks before we had kind of the first kind of really good insights out of the platform. But once we got to that stage, like I say, we kind of, especially on the affiliate side, we are attribution first. So the decisions we make are based on the attribution data and the impact we know it'll have on the funnel. So that's kind of, it's now kind of part of our day-to-day routine.
That's excellent. And that's hugely interesting. Sorry, we got to say something else.
I was going to say the third one is the way that the guys at SingleView tell you to do the tagging, do it that way. Because our tagging was quite good, and we were kind of quite proud of the way we tag things up. And we kind of thought everything, you know, we could just use our tagging to do it. And then, yeah, we got kind of 2 weeks into the process, and we had to kind of start it all again, because I think our tagging didn't go down to the level of granularity that the tool enables you to do. So when Mark and his guys say, set the tagging up like this, do it that way, because it'll save you doing it that way in 2 weeks' time anyway.
That's very good advice. And I'm going to end it on that note there. Lee, thank you very much for your time.
Hi, I'm Dawn Quigg. I'm the UK Client Services Director at Awin. And I'm joined by the lovely Laura Murnier from Global Savings Group. At Awin, we've got a real focus this year on improving quality standards, both in how we influence these as a business and also how we support the drive behind this in the wider industry. So with some of the work that Laura's been involved in, I'm keen to find out a little bit more about the work that's been going on to improve these standards. So first of all, Laura, how are you? And can you tell us a little bit about your role at Global Savings Group?
Hi, Dan. Thank you for the introduction, and I'm really pleased to be here with you. Just a quick introduction about myself, actually. So I'm the Associate Commercial Director at Global Savings Group, and I have over 10 years' experience in the industry, working really closely with our local team at GSG. I'm leading some of the global commercial initiative of the group, and I'm also a key driver for the industry adoption in the in-app tracking topic, which is a big topic this for the past few months. So yeah, that's me.
Thank you for the introduction there. And Global Savings Group has been involved in the publisher board from the outset of its formation. So I guess, can you tell us a little bit about how and why the publisher board came about?
Yeah, sure. So I would say back in 2019, a group of publishers, so in the UK, have started to work together on a code of conduct for advertisers. It was quite unique working together to highlight the standards and the best practice in the industry. But most importantly, what is not acceptable. So we work closely with GSG work closely with Top Cashback, Reward Gateway, Voucher Cloud, just to name a few. And we basically work on the three pillars to define those standards. So three big themes. First one will be tracking and deduplication. So everything related to current browser privacy restriction, ad blocker, mobile tracking. Then the second one is commission and payments. Big topic here around early notice for commission change, fast payment after validation, all the big theme, big topic for the affiliate channel and in particular for publisher. And then the third one is validation. So everything related to decline sales and specific reason around that, or when some products are partly returned, making sure that we don't decline the entire transaction. So I'll just give you an example, but we identify this big three theme. So as I said before, this is a unique project, and this is a first publisher-driven initiative.
Brilliant. So it sounds like you're working with a multitude of different publishers across, you know, the industry, which is amazing. Lots of different opinions and inputs there. And certainly, each of those topics you've just described are all independently very complex and huge topics in their own right. Indeed. So what have yourselves as a group managed to achieve so far? What would you say your sort of biggest achievements would be to call out?
Yes. So what I want to highlight first is that the publisher board represent all publishers. So we want to make sure that smaller publishers have also their voice heard. So it's important to say that because we really need to understand these practices, understand the impact for smaller publishers in order to communicate and also work with network to educate the advertiser on this new standard. So from this initial code of conduct document I was talking about just now, we have agreed on top priorities that can make an impact on the short term and become standard practices, because there are so many that we really need to focus our attention on the one we can change now. And I can highlight one. It's quite a hot topic now. It's in-app tracking, because we know only a small portion of advertisers have adopted the in-app affiliate tracking. And as an affiliate industry standard, advertisers have to clearly indicate on that program term if they are the in-app tracking enabled or not. It's really important. It should be an obligation. But as a best practice, technically, you know, all publishers should be credited to the transaction in the app. Because we know in-app shopping is like more and more popular, and especially for the past few months now, with the exceptional growth of e-commerce, it's essential that we get this in-app tracking enabled. Because publishers are losing money, losing commission, and we are not fairly paid for the transaction we are generating. So that's just give you an example of focus right now. It's only fair to be paid on mobile web and in-app transaction.
Absolutely. And I think the whole topic of in-app in itself is very exciting. But just as you mentioned, that's just one key focus for your group overall.
Yes.
So I guess I'd like to find out a little bit more about why you feel it's important to act collectively when it comes to pushing for things just like app tracking, like you've mentioned,
yes,
when it comes to industry standards. Can you tell us a little bit about your opinion on that?
Of course, yeah. First of all, because, you know, we have common interest to educate advertisers to affiliate best practice and work together for a fairer playing field. The publisher board, as I say, regroup publisher who utilize affiliate marketing as a core revenue generator. So we are all working together from cashback, voucher content, comparison, pay media and social publisher, everybody. So it's really important that that we work together, but as well, not only publisher, that it's important to say right now that without the support of network, we couldn't exist. You know, the support of affiliate network is crucial to achieve this common goal. So it's like a really team effort here.
of course. And I think just in respect of that, we're so keen to see how we can further support you this year, and indeed the other networks within the industry that you've been reaching out to for that input. I guess moving on from that, what do you see as the primary dangers for the affiliate industry if we say we don't act to improve some of the standards that you've been mentioning there?
Yes, so I would say the danger is to move away from a trusting relationship because of a lack of transparency and no real investment in partnership. It would definitely impact the performance of the program, but as well the user experience. It's important that we get some clarity on some of these practices. And if we go back to the, as I mentioned before, the publisher board top priorities, I can highlight another one. I mentioned in-app tracking. The other one is first-party cookie. So we know that affiliate tracking need to be compatible with the current browser privacy restriction. And some advertisers are still using the third-party cookie. So yeah, first-party cookie are vital for us as a result of data regulation, tougher one, and as well privacy product improvement from the tech giant. So it's like almost like, no discussion here. We need to move to first-party cookie. We need to move to make sure that every tracking is fully compatible to the current setup right now. So just to give you an example, it's in that, but as well a lot of other topic in our mind.
Excellent. And just like you say, many of these things aren't, really up for discussion anymore. We really need to show the industry that these are necessities and that we try and move them forward. So the work you guys are doing is really important there. And I guess just a final question then, Laura. So what specific priorities are the publisher board set to be focused on this year?
Yes, I would say just continuity, keep the momentum. The most important part is dialogue between publisher and ongoing cooperation. And it's more important than ever after all the crazy few months we had a lot of challenges in the industry. But it's important that we are working together because challenges mean as well, changes in terms of brand affiliate span and strategy. So it's important that we cooperate and we work together to improve this practices in the industry. So we need to continue communicating our publisher board vision, all the work we've done for the past couple of years to advertiser, but also and most importantly, continue to work closely with network to recommend and reinforce some of these best practices. So through communication, dialogue with advertiser, case studies, really try to prove the benefits of moving to the right direction. And two of them being, as I say, first-party cookie, in-app tracking, in-app transaction tracking. But there is definitely more to come this year with the support of network and working closely with advertiser.
Absolutely. Well, it's certainly set to be another busy year ahead then. So
indeed.
Listen, thank you so much, Laura, for your time. It's amazing to see so much passion and enthusiasm from, not just yourself, but of course the whole publisher board that's really getting behind this. So just to say on behalf of Awin that we're very excited to continue working with you and help get behind this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan.
By Holger von Ellertz, founder at the Swiss consultancy Digital Nalu and an expert on the local market in Switzerland. Thanks for joining me, Holger.
Thank you, Robert.
So I wanted to kick off, as I always do with these Meet the Market segments, with a question around what you think actually distinguishes the Swiss digital advertising industry from other regions around the world.
Switzerland has four official languages or four national languages, and this is pretty unique. We have German, French, Italian, and Romansh, and have different dialects, and this is pretty unique inside Europe or inside the world, maybe. And sometimes we always advertise in English too, so we have at least 4 to 5 languages we normally have to advertise. That makes it pretty complicated in the market. In general, the Swiss customer I'd like to talk about too. He's very focused on quality. I mean, you have markets where where the customers also buy cheap products, and in the Swiss market they buy really high quality products. And it is I wanted to point out. And yes, and Switzerland, because it's a pretty small country, we have a little bit or a high regional pride, I would say it. So everybody's proud of his region, and so a lot of people buy local or regionally products, and also go to offline stores or local stores to support them. And this is, I think, pretty unique, apart from maybe Germany, where it's a little bit larger country. And you don't have maybe these connection to your locals.
Speaking specifically about the affiliate channel in Switzerland, how do you think that is generally perceived by advertisers and brands in your local market?
Yeah, because I worked in different parts of this advertising market, so also on publisher side, and it's a pretty publisher-driven market. So without any publishers, nothing going to happen. And because they regulate the price, and so an affiliate as an advertiser, you want to have pay a low price, and the publisher want to have a maximum high price. And I mean, 10 years ago, performance marketing or affiliate marketing was not such a big deal in Switzerland, because the publishers had a really strong position. And but with the entry of more Google and Facebook and all the social media and also performance marketing, what we brought with AdCloud 10 years ago to Switzerland, these market is a little bit, it would be a bit broader. It's not only this high pricing, it's also more, you get a lower price for advertising. And as I said, as an advertiser, affiliate marketing has still a strong performance character. So it's a lot of perception of the advertiser a little bit too much in the lower funnel. It's just for selling product, and that's the perception of the most advertisers here in the market. In my opinion, affiliate marketing can do more in Switzerland because of a good infrastructure for advertising. There are enough people to buy high quality products, and so affiliate marketing has to come out this niche or only performance marketing to grow a little bit more.
I was going to ask you a bit about the what you think the biggest challenges that the Swiss affiliate industry currently faces, and I guess maybe one of them would be that perception by brands, advertisers, that it is just a lower funnel conversion channel rather than anything else around brand awareness.
Yeah, I think this cookieless tracking, I mean, affiliate marketing is a lot of cookie-based advertisement, and I think that's the biggest challenge for affiliate marketing, because you have such a lot of publisher base, and I think that's for the platform itself, affiliate marketing itself, that's the biggest challenge. But as I said, affiliate marketing has to come out of this lower funnel niche into the Google's called middle messy, messy middle. So in the lower has to rise up from the lower funnel to the mid funnel, and to have the right strategy but you need the right strategy for it. And I think a lot of advertisers are not ready for this.
Yeah, I think that recent research that Google published around the messy middle was really fascinating. And it was interesting within it to note just how many digital touch points are users are interacting with now, and that many of them actually mirror exactly all of the different publisher models that exist within the affiliate channel.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you as well, inevitably, obviously in 2020, we've seen the global pandemic, coronavirus, has impacted shopping habits around the world. And I wanted to ask from a Swiss perspective, whether or not you expect to see a permanent increase in e-commerce adoption because of it.
I think there's a time before the coronavirus and the time after. And when I look to my clients and conversion rates, and also on the affiliate channel, it rose incredible during the lockdowns, or as the new lockdown announced now, you see rising conversion rates. And more money is going into the e-commerce market, but it's not healthy for all companies, because they have also the local stores. And what I said in the first hand, we have a lot of locals or local producers, and they can't get a positive out of the coronavirus. And also with bigger brands, I hope there will be a change in mind, that e-commerce and affiliate marketing is a strong channel, and we saw it on Black Friday this year. It's a pretty yes, nice channel to work with and to get a good revenue out of it. But yeah, I think it will be better, but the Swiss people are a little bit under the first movers. I think that they wait a little bit until maybe Germany has, signs out, oh yeah, that's a good channel, and then they're pushing forward.
Yeah, definitely. And talking of pushing forward and looking to the future, are there any new or innovative local publisher models or businesses that you've seen recently in the affiliate channel that you think are particularly interesting from a local perspective?
Honestly, not.
No.
I mean, the publisher models they're like all the same. So on the one hand, you have some kind of paid models. On the other hand, you have freemium, or it's all advertisement based. So it's nothing what I hadn't seen in the last years.
So finally, then, I always like to round up these Meet the Market segments with by asking my local expert how they can sum up their local affiliate industry in three words. So how would you sum up the Swiss affiliate industry in three words?
I think the Swiss affiliate industry, it's too small at the moment, though it can grow. Second is it's underestimated. It's definitely underestimated and has a huge potential. So not three words, a little bit more, but I think that's the key point here here in Switzerland.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot, Holger, for joining us. And
thank you.
I look forward to seeing the industry grow out there. Special thanks to all of our guests on this month's episode, and you can find out more about both SingleView and Awin's gold standard within this year's Awin report on the Awin site. Rounding things off for today's podcast, I wanted to just highlight the recent award wins at the UK Performance Marketing Awards, where Awin bagged 6 wins, including the coveted Publisher's Choice of Network. So thank you everybody that voted for us in that. Best Industry Initiative for Awin Access, our self-managed solution for micro SMEs, and also the Best Wellbeing Initiative for the launch of our new 4-day working week this year, which I have to say I'm a huge personal fan of. What about you, Kev?
Well, today's my day off, so you're making me do this.
It's not working out well then, is it? What did you have coming up that you think is worth highlighting to listeners?
So there's one thing that I particularly just wanted to note, which is that we're running a series of webinars for people who are using various different publishing platforms. So we've particularly focused in on Wix, WordPress, and Squarespace, as they're the three most commonly used ones by our publishers. And it's sort of an initiative that's part of our drive for them to integrate with our most robust and flexible tracking. So the product marketing team is running 3 of those webinars. And what they are going to be doing is talking about the Awin Publisher Master Tag, which, as mentioned, is kind of an essential part of our tracking for bloggers because it helps drive page load times. It speeds page load times up, which, you know, if you look at any kind of research into this, it says that also helps drive conversion. So it kind of makes complete sense because effectively your ads and links are working harder for you and become more profitable. But the master tag isn't just limited to tracking. I would say think of it as almost like an app store solution that allows you to kind of switch on other bits of tech based on your personal preferences and areas that you feel can enhance your content. So Converter Link, for example, which automatically creates affiliate links for you, so you don't have to do them manually. Or if you wanted our universal ad disclosure tool, Admission, and that appends each of your links with a disclosure icon, then you can easily switch those on as well with the master tag. So the webinars will be talking a little bit about each of those component parts, but then they will be doing a walkthrough of each of the platforms as well. So they'll be demoing how to implement them on each of those 3 sites. So we're recording, the time of recording, they're supposed to be going ahead next week. So when this episode comes out, they should be around about now. But don't worry if you do miss them, because we will be hosting the content on our blog subsequently. So look out for those.
Great. And lastly from me today, we've also just launched a brand new Advertiser Success Center at Awin, which is designed to support our clients in providing them with all the resources they need to successfully manage and optimize their programs. Now, the hub features tons of articles, how-to guides, video tutorials, and much more aimed at making affiliate marketing activity ever easier to run. So if you ever have any kind of query about Awin's tools, reports, or technology, you can head over there to have your question quickly solved. The center is currently available in the UK, US, and German markets, and we have additional European versions in the works, which will be available very soon too. So keep your eyes peeled out for those. That's it for this week's edition. When this comes out, we'll already know who's won the European Championship. Kev, do you want to speculate as to what the score might be on Sunday?
2-1.
Two.
One of the teams.
Do you want to hazard a guess? Oh, you're going to England. Okay.
Oh, you've got to say England, haven't you?
Okay. I'm going to be even more optimistic and say that we win 3-1.
Oh, there we go.
In extra time.
Do you want to put any money on it?
No. Anyway, that's it for this week's edition. Thanks for joining Kev and I, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. It's goodbye from me and goodbye from Kev.
Goodbye.